Welcome to Real Stories, a show that has honest conversations from the heart. I invite you to sit back, relax, and allow our guests to speak their truth.
Hello, I'm Taylor, the communication doctor, and welcome to Real Stories. I just want to say, I come from a family where people didn't always speak their truth. And I think it's so important to speak their truth. And every day I meet people who, because of society, are just walking with that facade because they feel that it is the way to be. And in Real Stories, I want people to know the real story behind the facade. And that is why I do what I do. Hi, this is Real Stories, and I am your host, Tanya the Communication Doctor. And today on my show, I have Lola Fayemi. Hello, Lola.
Hey, Tan.
It's so lovely to have you today. I love the way that you just called me Tan as well, because only it's really nice, because I'll let people into a secret. Only my real close friends call me Tan. Oh. And it's a real South London thing. So it's nice from a South London to another South Londoner. So thank you for that. And I'm just going to introduce you, Lola, as a leadership coach, a transformational specialist, and a writer. Yeah? Mm. Hey, that's quite a title, isn't it, babe?
Mm. Yeah. It's so hard to label, to name yourself, right? The titles. Yes. That feels good. Mm. You know, when you land somewhere, you're like, yeah, I think that'll do. That kind of covers it.
it's totally. And just before we came on today, I was asking you how I pronounce your name, because your name is from Nigerian origin. And I said, I want to get it right. I want to get right Fayemi. I want to get that right. Because sometimes people have to shorten their name, change their name. And you were doing that a little bit. You said, just call me Lola or just call me Fayemi. So talk to me a little bit about that, because you must have gone through life where you've always had to constantly change your name. And you seem like you're okay with it.
Yeah, I am, because for me it's coming from both. Like, so I'm British. How do I call myself? I'm a British person. I'm a Black British person born in the UK, but my parents were of Nigerian origin. Mm. My dad came over in the 60s, my mum came over in the 70s. I didn't go when I was growing up. I've never been, actually, not to Nigeria, into Africa, different part. Yeah, never been. And also, I'm in London, I'm in South London, which is very, there's a lot of different people in South London, right? South London is an extremely multicultural place to grow up.
Yes.
So identity is something that I've always been interested in. And actually, even in my dissertation for my degree 20 years ago, I graduated 21 years ago last month, was on identity. How do you form your identity as a Black British person? Because I found it, before I kind of reconciled it and made peace with it, I found it confusing coming from both ends, from both the Nigerian end and from the British end. So growing up, and I think a lot of Nigerians and other people actually in this country probably have this experience, my parents always were like, you're Nigerian, you're Nigerian, you're Nigerian, right? My mum would not have it, well, and that sounds weird, but my mum would not have it that we were British, even though we were here, right? Mm. And she wasn't taking us or anything like that. And so, and also at home, obviously we're Nigerian, our family's Nigerian, blah, blah, blah. And then in the Nigerian community, let's say, or Nigerian people don't really see me as Nigerian because I'm British to them. They know, people that are actually from Nigeria, it's like, I'm English girl. You know how they are. They call you white girl, really, and then I'm not English neither, like the sort of white English people. So I think for me, where I've made peace with that is that It's for me, it's about stripping away the story and the bullshit and just going with most of the facts.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Mm. I am Black. My ethnic origin is Nigerian, and I'm proud of that. I'm not hiding that. I'm born in London. The real pronunciation of my name is Lola. That's how it would be pronounced in Nigerian. That doesn't feel natural to me to say that. Like, just suddenly, I'm going to say it like this now. And the real pronunciation of my surname is Fayemi. So it's Fayemi. Yeah. So which is fine. But I actually call myself Fayemi. Mm. Because it looks like that to me. Fayemi. Yeah. So I think you've got to make peace with your own identity. It's not for someone else to tell you who you are and who you're not. You know, because I have a lot of people that say, oh, God, you've never been. No, I haven't been. Like, it's not, honestly, it's not a massive deal to me. Yeah. And I'm a deep feeler. And I feel like if there was a genuine call and pull there, I would have felt that. Mm-hmm. You know, interestingly enough, I have a massive pull to Cuba.
Oh, that is funny.
Yeah, so that's where it comes out. I think it comes out there because Cuba's got, I like ancient. I'm more of a fan of the ancient than the modern. Yeah.
Yes.
So I have related in Cuba. I do salsa, Afro-Cuban salsa dancing, which is very much about, based on, people don't realize this, but it's based on West African mythology.
Yes.
So through salsa, I have learned and danced, because I love to dance and move, much more my style, about the Yoruba, which is the tribe that my dad comes from, the Yoruba gods and goddesses. And I think Cuba's probably one of the only places on the planet where you get pure props for having Nigerian heritage.
I love that. I think you get pure props in loads of places, Mina. I mean, come on, you know.
Really? But,
I feel so. But something like I said, everybody's experience is different, you know. And I mean, I've got quite a few friends, Nigerian and West African. And I love that kind of connection. Which is really rich, is the language. So do you speak like Yoruba? Do you speak it?
My mum's Igbo.
Okay, yeah. So your dad's Yoruba. Okay, so you've got us. I know there's a clash there as well. I know that's another thing.
Yeah. What? How did they get married? And I was actually not aware of any of this stuff. Like, what? Yeah. Big deal. I love it though. I love being Nigerian. Yeah. I'm aware of the part, what it gives me, you know, and the sort of the energy, the vibe, the power. Like, I think we're incredible people, you know, and I will relate to it in my way, thanks.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that.
Well, I love that, because you just take ownership. You're just taking ownership of who you are, what you're about. And like you say, when you feel called to go to Nigeria, you'll go when you feel called and when you feel ready, you know, or you might not go. It's that totally down to you. But it's interesting how people always have these perceptions and judgments. And I love the fact that you just said, you know what, I've never been to Nigeria, so what? Do you know? So what? You know, it's a place, it's your heritage, and in time you may go there. And I love the fact that you also said you connect with the Cuban energy as well and going to Cuba. And I love Cuba as well. You've said all the nice things, because I love Cuba. I love salsa dancing as well. I mean, I remember going salsa dancing to Barloca, which anyone that's British and lives in London will know, because it's down in Charing Cross, and it's where you used to go to like salsa dance back in the day. I don't know if people are still going there now, but it was okay. And then there's I love that. Then there's this place in Brixton. There's another place in Brixton which is full of Colombians. It's a real kind of a lot of people may not know this, but in Brixton there's a real kind of Colombian vibe. There's a lot of Colombian people that live there. And there's a bar, and it used to also be full of salsa. And it was just nice to be able to salsa with a man that really knows what he's doing, because in salsa the man leads. And if you don't have a really good male dancer, it can make you look bad, you know? So it's important. It's important when they can dance well, because it, you know, takes you on that journey. It takes you on that
break
journey.
Away. There's a trick.
Exactly.
And freestyle the whole dance.
Totally. That's quite funny. And then sometimes with the whole Colombian thing as well, I love dancing with some of those Colombian men, but they'd be a lot shorter than me. But I still enjoy it.
But they do a different type of salsa. They do a different type of salsa as well.
They do.
I mean, it looks incredible. Cali salsa, much more sort of jivey and jumpy. And, you know, I'm a bass Afro-Cuban dance girl, you know?
Yeah,
dancing the Afro moves, the rumba, the Cuban rumba and things like that.
Yeah. Oh, really nice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Beautiful. That's nice. Well, that's what I would... When I used to do sales, that's where I used to go. So it's probably more of a Colombian feel. So that'd be interesting to have an experience of that real Cuban vibe. I do love the bass and love the music. But let's just come back to this spirituality, because Lola, you said you're a leadership coach and you're a transformational coach. But underneath that transformation, there's a lot of spirituality that you do within your work. Tell us a little bit about that, and where does that come from for you?
So I'm a transformation specialist is what I call myself, and a leadership coach, because that feels more real. When it comes to transformation, it's not just coaching that I'm drawing upon. You know, I'm drawing upon, like you said, spiritual and energetic practices, my personal and professional experiences. And so where it comes from for me, I mean, I grew up religious, or I grew up in a religious home, let's be, that was probably more appropriate. But I never felt God. I wasn't, you know, I think it was just, I didn't like ever going to church, really. It was, there was no, it wasn't an option. Church of England we were. But I did like hymns and stuff like that. And then when I had my first awakening, which was basically a shattering of the world as I knew it, my world as I knew it up until that point in my 20s, I'd just living a very typical successful existence, you know, educated, working, earning great money, deeply unfulfilled, deeply unsatisfied. And then my dad got sick, he got cancer. So this is what started this awakening for me, because it was super scary and I couldn't control it and I didn't know if he was going to die. Gosh. And at the time, I had a really close relationship with my dad, with my family. And yeah, it was just, we'd never been through anything like that before. So something, I don't know, it was almost just like, I think spirituality is there anyway. Yeah, you know, I really do. I think it's always there behind the scenes. I think space is one of the ways that you connect to it. And things happen sometimes that when they create that space, then that truth can come through. Like, I think it's just truth, you know. So to be fair, before that happened, there was a little, there was a moment where I had, for the first, this sounds weird, but for the first time in my life, I was about 24, I'd spent time on my own. And I'd never done that before. And it was only about an hour, but it was, I know, it sounds terrible, but I was always around people. I had a sister that we were really, really close, just always, I was very sociable back when I was younger. And I never was, I didn't understand this concept of like in your own company. And so at work, I used to work in sales, recruitment, used to have the top people used to go on these big jollies paid for by the company each year. And so one year I went to Dubai. For that, no, was it? No, South Africa. Sorry, we was in South Africa. We was in Cape Town, and there was some activities you could choose from, and I chose a spa day. But all the girls went on a different day from me, and I went quad biking with the lads because I really wanted to do that too. So when it came to my spa day, I went on my own, and I was, you know, chatting away to the woman nonstop, and then she put me in this seaweed bath, and she was like, "I'm going to come back in half an hour." And I was like, what? What? What am I supposed to do on my own for half an hour? I'm not thinking like, please don't leave me, don't leave me, don't leave me. And, like literally. And like the first 5 minutes, I was just, I don't even know. I did not know what to do with myself. And then it was like, just peaceful, just really bloody peaceful and really nice. She'd already pummeled me to death with this salt stuff, and then I was just in this seaweed bath. It was drawing out all the, we'd been literally drinking and barely sleeping for like 5 days straight, so all the toxins were coming out. And then after that, I remember leaving that and going into the sauna on my own for about another half an hour and just continuing that. And I remember coming home and feeling so grateful, and I'm so grateful that I lived this life and blah blah blah, I'm really going to be grateful for it, blah blah blah. And then I didn't last for another 2 months.
Wow.
I knew it was because of that time, yeah. That I had on my own. So that cracking open, it was weird. It was like scary and all of that. But then there was also really clear messages coming through from me, like, you obviously don't have a clue about life. You thought you did. You know, everything you thought you knew, you need to let that go. So I did, you know, and I just kind of went where... It felt easy because I'd all, not easy, that's a lie, but it felt, there was some kind of ease to it though, because I'd always done what I was supposed to do and it didn't work.
Yeah.
So, well, I ain't got a clue then, have I? It's best I could feel that I wanted fulfillment. I could feel that. But I didn't even know if it, I know it sounds weird now, I didn't even know if it was possible to get fulfillment. I didn't know anyone who was fulfilled.
And how do you feel about that now? It's interesting you say that, because I always feel fulfillment is a journey. Do you feel that you've been on that journey? Do you feel fulfilled now, or do you feel that you've still got something to learn? What's your take on that?
I know what you mean. There's no, I mean, I do feel fulfilled, yes. And you know, there's always room for more fulfillment.
Yeah.
And things change and goalposts change, and something you're striving towards become, you achieve it and that becomes normal. And then it's, you know, what's sort of the next evolution. So how do I feel about that now? Like, I can't imagine a life without fulfillment. I can't live my life without fulfillment. Fulfillment is completely possible. It's a lot easier than people think is. And that doesn't mean life isn't difficult or challenging, you know, but it's still, it's about the fulfillment piece that's really important. Like, there's meaning. It's important for me to live a life of meaning. That's what activates my soul fire. You know, like, I'm very big on, my soul fire's got to be involved. I've got to be living from that, you know? And that for me is what fulfillment is. Because I can, listen, I'm a strong woman. I can do anything, to be honest with you. You know, I'm a Capricorn climbing up that freaking mountain, you know. It's like, what do I want to apply that to, you know? Because I can apply it to whatever I want, but I need to deeply be connected to it. It needs to have some meaning and some bigger, something like that's about being connected to something bigger than yourself and letting that work through you. So that is how I, that's how I work. Like, I don't necessarily always talk about that. That's how I work in the room, in the corporate work that I do. I don't need to sort of talk about it so overtly. I don't think that's always necessary. Because I just think it's a natural thing.
No, I agree with you. And it's lovely what you've just said there, because I feel like fulfillment is something when you are, when you kind of accept who you are with your flaws and all. And it's interesting, to be fulfilled, some people feel that they have to have everything in place. And if they're thinking they've got to have everything in place, then they've kind of missed the boat, really. Because I do feel like that fulfillment is looking around yourself, accepting what you have and embracing it. And I think once you're there, then you could either want more or take less or appreciate things. Because I think it's interesting, I feel like myself, in the last 2 or 3 years, or even during this COVID period, I felt that I've appreciated the things and valued the things that I have. And some of the things that I've valued are some of the simplest things. And I feel sometimes in life, or sometimes always wanting more, 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 more. And then you look in front of you and you can't, some people you're wanting more, you're looking outside of yourself, what more this, what more this, and more that. And you might have something right in front of you that you can't even see. And that simple thing for me is just my kids. They're my biggest fulfillment. And, you know, they're staring you in the face every day. And you might be chasing this and chasing that. And you're thinking, hold on a minute, you've got these people here that love you unconditionally, do you know, that you connect with. And, I mean, my fulfillment comes within me, myself, you know, myself first. But it's kind of, I feel like it's accepting what's around you, accepting what's in your energy field. And for some people, it may not be, because they may not have children, it may be something else, but whatever's in your energy field. So it's interesting what you said in terms of lighting your fire, accepting yourself. And I feel that is thing. Let's talk, I want to take it a little bit further though, because we have had lots of conversations. And I wanted to put these conversations on the podcast.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about the Black female experience. Another reason why I've got you on the show is because you've got the Black female experience. You love to dance like I do, and you're a South Londoner like I do. I mean, I'm not currently living in London, but yeah, do you know what I mean? But it's kind of that energy. But I suppose the only difference is, I suppose, my parents are Jamaican and your parents are Nigerian, but that's not a big difference. It's an experience.
Yeah.
And I kind of want to speak to you as a Black woman to a Black woman who's in the spiritual world. Because we've spoken a lot about having this, I've been told in the past when I'm in sometimes of those groups, or I'm sat down in the circle with a bunch of spiritual women, I might be the only Black woman there when we do a lot of this work, or when I do Reiki or that sort of thing. And I've always been told Tanya, I'm going to help, or I've been invited, Tanya, I can help you open up your feminine chakras, your feminine energy. And I get quite annoyed about that because I think I'm very feminine. But sometimes as a black woman, there's sometimes this perception of this masculine energy. Oh, they've got to open up their feminine energy. And then I thought it was just me. And when I spoke to you, you said you had the same experience. So I'd like to talk to me about that, about being in those circles, about taking ownership of who you are.
Yeah.
And what's your story on that kind of, in that kind of world?
Yeah. So if I'm honest, am I allowed to swear on this?
Of course you can. It's,
you know, I'm a South Londoner, so.
Am I allowed to swear? Oh my God. I don't think much children listen to my podcast. I think they'd be really bored if they did. Maybe you should be honest.
Yeah, I don't fuck with those circles. You know, I don't.
Be real.
Yeah, I don't think I ever had the inclination that I felt I had to.
Yeah.
I didn't have that to start off with. So I came into this work through Reiki. So I came into this work through energy work, and it was through my best friend's mum and stepdad, actually. They were Reiki masters. It was just almost like life had planned it all for me anyway. I didn't really know much about what they did. But again, this was calling me in that direction.
Yeah.
So I was having this experience completely separate from this world. And if I'm honest, in my first awakening, I thought I was the only one on the planet going through it anyway. I didn't know about anything about a self-help industry or anything. Someone talking about Louise Hay, this was like, oh, when I read You Can Heal Your Life, it was like, it's oh amazing. My God. That I think was a godsend for me, actually, because and I've always been one for like my own experience, and then I like to hear about other people's experiences after, or hear about evidence or reason after, but I don't, that's not a prerequisite for me at all. So I have also always found that I just feel like, generally speaking, right, that world's just really fraffing about.
It is.
Fraffing about. So when I did, so here we go, spirituality and feminine energy, right? I trained as a coach in 2007. And then 2011, we had the London riots. I live in Croydon, so it was like a big thing. There was a big iconic building that was on fire.
Furniture shop, wasn't it?
Yeah,
that's right. I remember. Yeah.
And this was literally all of us. Like, if you're in Croydon, you're like, it was the vision of it was like, wow.
Yeah.
But also, I'd never lived through anything like that. Do you know what I mean? My little privileged London life. I never lived through civil war, nothing, right? So this was just very, it was a bit scary. Like, I remember, this is the South London in me, I remember going to bed with an iron bar under my bed that night, just in case, you know? And people are like, why did you have an iron bar in your house? I don't know, but I did. And so, because it was
you've got to protect yourself, isn't it? You've got some protection. Case. You know what I mean? Exactly. No, I'll be you.
So then that woke me up, though. There was, and I had my son. My son was about two. So it was a real kind of like moment where the mother and me had already woken up with my son. That's feminine energy, right? That's a feminine archetype.
Of course.
This was a mother thing. I connected to the riots in a mother way. I saw it really clearly for what was going on. Like, oh man, you know what? I get this. I understand what's going on. Like, you cannot keep marginalizing certain sections of society and not expect them to lash back at you at some point, right?
Of course.
But then the next day, because I don't really do much with current affairs, and the next day, I remember just being glued to the news. I suppose I thought they were going to see it like me. And all I saw was like feral kids, da, 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 da. And I was like, what? Tougher sentences, this, that, and that. I'm like, whoa, this is not the answer. Like, this is not solving anything, guys. So something else woke up in, and also a lot of these kids were young and black.
Yes.
So, you know, the mum again in me was just like, oh man, you know. I can do something. I know I can. I've got the right mix of professional experience. I know these kids. I know how to make this shit really relatable and down to earth for them. And actually, I would love to do stuff with them. But I don't know how, because I know nothing about this. And so maybe I'll just, this is something I'll do when I'm like in my 50s for some reason. And then obviously life and its synchronistic events, I end up leading a project in prison. So it was, this was where I really got to lead in a different way. Like the reason I was there was for my soul fire. You know, it was a calling. I didn't choose to do it. I had a completely different plan for myself, but I was called in that direction. It was really obvious. If I really feel a call, I know there's no, I'm not going to go against it. It ended up being so fulfilling. I ended up learning to lead like a woman. And that meant I had to learn who I was as a woman. And in fact, but this touches on your fulfillment thing as well, because for me, what it is I think for, fulfillment, I'm just seeing it. There's something about being full of yourself, like you're all of you. And there's, and you've had your whole life of people saying in various ways or getting messages that you're not allowed to be all of you, right?
Yes.
And that's why I do think it's important. Missions are important. If you've got something you're in service of, it makes it easier. It makes it easier for me just to be like, well, this isn't about me and what I'm uncomfortable with. Like, here's a good enough reason to let all this out. I want to let it out in service of this project. And we just created such magic. You know, we pioneered coaching in prisons in the UK. We, over 1,000 young men went through our program. It carries on. I'm not involved anymore, but it's, you know, I set it up and its legacy is important to me. That carries on, hopefully through COVID. I don't know what the hell's going on there. But also we introduced like systemic coaching. We were trying to do some stuff to help the culture. So, you know, we facilitated like large group constellation-esque, if anyone's familiar with the term sort of deep democracy or process psychology, conversations between officers and prisoners, where they would both take some ownership over the environment that they're in and talk about how they could make it better. But what, loosely speaking, right? But it really surfaces all the themes, and it's not just some boring, you know, it's intense, man. And it's a lot to hold, and we'd have a group of us holding it. But I was excited, you know, because it was like, I want to say my vision, but that's not completely true, because I couldn't see it. But I knew when it was, you know, all of me came into play, my sales background, you know, to get us into the prison, to build those, my sales background was always about relationships, building those relationships with those governors to get into the prison, winning their trust, having them come and saying, what can we do to, if we wanted to make our officers have a little bit more empathy? And then me and my madness going, let's do a deep democracy. Let's get everyone all together and let's do this and let's do that, you know. And the backlashes and all of that kind of stuff. And the coaches that the program that I designed and the coaches that I trained to do the program. And this was like, so you know what? Fuck you and your shitty feminine energy. Yeah. Because this was like real feminine energy. This was coming from the mother. This was creation. This was bringing people together. This was connection. There was nothing namby-pamby about it. Yet there was vulnerability. There was the power of gentleness and kindness. And there was fire and fierceness and humor. And we were in a bloody dark environment, you know, a dark, traumatic place, you know, working with the darkest system in our society. And for me, there was always a feeling of, I want to see, it reminds me when I went out to look if I could do this fulfillment. It was kind of like, I want to see if we can do this here. Because I feel like if we can do it here, then we can do it anywhere.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally, totally. No, I love that, because what you're coming from, I just wrote you down as well. You've got your solution-based, you're strong, you're courageous, you're nurturing, you're looking at it from a mother's perspective, you know, you're wanting to solve these issues or solve a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm because this is real story, so I want to go a little bit back.
Mm.
Were you always this person as a child? Were you always this? Is there any example of you as a child being like this? Is this always how you've been? Because as I know you, I see that strength.
I think so. Obviously, it's all relative, right? So that doesn't mean that I don't have my own challenges and stuff. Of course I do.
Yes.
I do see that I've always been a ballsy, outspoken chick.
I love it.
Teller, you know, I'm a truth teller. I'm the, you know, here we go. This is what I'm, you know, I'm writing my book at the same time, so a lot of it's becoming really clear to me. But what I'm realizing is one of the stories I always related to personally, and still do to this day, is I often felt like the little boy in The Emperor's New Clothes.
Yeah,
that story, yeah. Where the emperor's got no clothes on, and the tailor has said, well, only amazing people can see the clothes, and then he doesn't want to appear not amazing, so he goes out naked in front of the crowd, and everyone's going, can't you see it? Only amazing people can see it. So they're all like, oh, this is amazing. And then there's this little boy that's like, he's got no clothes on. Everyone can see that, you know. And I've always felt a bit like that kind of, what? Why can't everyone else see this? He's got no clothes on. However, you know, I have had trauma when I was younger. I did go through, you know, some deep wounding and stuff. So I feel like it's almost like it's always been I've always been holding it in.
Okay.
That's what it's always felt like for me. Like, like I'm not allowed. My whole sort of, a lot of my issues always come back to being denied, being denied, being denied. You know, not allowed to be myself. But that's, I think that's, my dad was a narcissist. That's quite common when you have that kind of upbringing. Mm. It was never about me. But that thing, that truth of me, you can't keep it down. Like, even when I'm trying to sort of blend in or trying to be visible, like, that doesn't seem to be my nature. Mm. And so the prison work was the first time in my life, actually, where it was like, oh, I can get to use all of this in service. Like, it requires me to be bigger and too much. And there's a reason. It's not just self-indulgent, you know what I mean? There's a reason. I mean, it isn't self-indulgent to be yourself. It really isn't.
People say that, don't they? I get that all the time. Whenever you start to be open or you express yourself, you often get it from people who find it hard to do that. They'll say stuff like it's self-indulgent, right, or it's vanity. I don't believe it. I mean, I'm the opposite. I just think it's someone expressing themselves. But I've been, people have said that to me, or, you know, and I thought to myself, what? Do you know what I mean? But I just realised that is where you are. Yeah. You know, other people have said, God, you're showing up, you're supported. Mm. So you've got to meet people where they are. You're going to get the haters. I call them the haters, you're going to get the lovers and the haters, and you can't do anything about it. And it depends on where they are in their world. I do want to go back a little bit, Lola, because we do in sometimes I do talk about trauma. Mm. And you did mention that, you know, you've been through trauma, and you mentioned your father.
Mm.
Tell us a little story about that, because I always I think it's really important for people to know or to see where this person, where you're coming from.
Yeah. So trauma-wise, the trauma that I was always aware of, but was a secret to me, a secret not to me, but to anyone else. I never told anyone about it till I was in my 20s, mid to late 20s, was when I was younger, I was sexually abused as a child, not by my dad. Mm. But that was something that kind of just shocked the life out of me. That was a big sort of trauma, right?
Mm, of course, yeah.
Yeah. And one that we all recognize. But that's not been the one that's been the hardest to unpack, actually, for me.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, yeah.
So when, again, the prison work was when I realized I had trauma. I didn't know before then.
Mm.
Something was happening in the air. And it wasn't just me. There was a lot of secondary trauma, basically. Or vicarious trauma. And there was one time I remember going to a domestic violence talk, and I thought, oh, it comes up a lot in our work. Let me go and just learn some more about this. And I came out I think I was raised in a domestically violent home. You know, there wasn't any physical violence. You know, my mom and dad weren't even into beating, but it was psychological.
Yes.
It was emotional, it was coercive.
Mm.
And the dynamic between my mum and dad was awful, really bad, you know, in hindsight. But it was really, it was my normal world, you know. And he was a narcissist, she was an enabler, and it was a mess. And so when I started to, so that's traumatic. That's just a sea of trauma. That's what you call complex PTSD, basically. Mm. And that's like when this ongoing wounding, just from how you're just being in a toxic dynamic, just even being in her womb. I mean, my mum's got, the reality is everyone's got trauma. That's the reality.
Yeah, I love the fact you just said that because I feel that's so real. And I also love the fact that you said you didn't recognise it because it's normalised. Because a lot, that's the issue, because a lot of people who have been through trauma, it is normalised.
Yep.
And a lot of the time you don't see it until you do this work or until you do the self-development work or until you go to a counselling class or you sit down with a bunch of people who have been domestically abused. Because you might think, oh God, no, I haven't, I've not. Because sometimes you might think if someone's got really hit someone, that's domestic abuse. But people don't think about, like you said, the psychological abuse. Mm. And when you look at all of those different levels of trauma, I think the majority of people have gone through some form of trauma. So when people say, no, I've not experienced any trauma in my life, I kind of, in my mind, I think, yeah. Because I know that they probably don't realise
what in their
they've experienced. And you've just got to leave people to work it out when they work it out. Because I don't think that's something you can force. I hate it when people try to say, oh, you know, tell me about this. But at the end of the day, when someone's ready to speak or they're ready to open up, I feel that's important. But I know, because you were in the self-development industry, we're talking real stories. And I think when people come on my show, this is something we do talk openly about, because I always feel there's dark and there's shade. You know what I mean? Sorry, there's dark and there's shade. Of course, so there's dark and there's shade and there's light. We've all got that shadow self or that shadow side. And everyone's got it, but it's how do we deal with it? How do we then push forward? How do we then recognise it? And I love what you just said when you're looking back at the home that you've kind of brought up in. So how do you then change that in terms of the home that you're now providing as a mother? That's where the self-development work goes, isn't it?
Really different, yeah. And it's a lot of work, actually. Mm. But it does require that you're... And maybe that can be the mission as well. Sometimes that's the mission, isn't it? Like, I want my child to have some other experience.
Yes.
And all the stuff comes, you know? Mm. But yeah, I just want to say as well about the trauma... It sits in your blind spot. And even when I realized, I knew quite a lot about a lot of things and I couldn't see it. Mm. And it took a coach at the time to say to me, I think it might be trauma. And as soon as she did, it was just like, oh my God, of course. And thank God, because like, I was really starting to think there was something seriously wrong with me, you know, because I'd got into a whole loop of things where I was just like, I don't know what's going on, but I'm feeling so insecure at the moment. And I suddenly was just like, I don't know where this has come from. And it was going on for like 9 months. It wasn't just like, it was just like, whoa. And I was battling. But it's completely different. Like I'm still cleaning up. There's still going to be clean up for a while, I think, in the process. But I have an 11-year-old son and he's amazing. And I parent him consciously. I think that's what it is. It's like I create. And so me and his dad, we were together for like 22 years and we're no longer together, yet we really successfully co-parent. And honestly, it's one of the things I'm most proud of in the whole entire world, like genuinely of co-parenting, because we didn't click at first. We kind of did it and we created this thing and the process itself was much more intense and griefy and stuff. But It for me, it's a real example of always where I go to when I'm feeling a bit like, oh, I don't know if I can do this. I always go there like, but you did that. That means you can do it. Mm. You know, because nobody told us, nobody showed us, we created this. You know, we continue to create this thing that works for us. And therefore my son still gets to grow up around two parents who are as far as I'm concerned, a healthier relationship than a lot of people that are in relationship with each other, right?
Totally brilliant, yeah.
It's based on love, mutual respect, support. Sometimes I think it's actually a lot more loving than when we were together. And that's a big thing for me. I want love. I want all my relationships to honour the love at the end of the day. And if that means that we can't see each other a lot, I'm okay with that. Like, if that's what I require to stay in love with you, you know, like friends or family, like, I love you, I freaking can't fucking stand you, you know, or you're just toxic as hell and I can't be around you, or I can't talk to you no more. to have you in a good place in my heart is the most important thing. Yeah, I'm not bound by this. Oh, you know, I went no contact with my dad, you know, so I wasn't bound. And that was tough. That was tough. But again, that's when you can do that, you can do it. You really, again, you're like, all relationships are up for fucking grabs. Nobody needs to be in my life who doesn't need to be in my life. When you can do that, yeah, there's a lot of things you, there's a lot of freedom that it grants you. And no, I don't, I'm just saying all this stuff like this, right? I cannot explain to you the intensity of the process that you go through to do all this stuff. It's hard. It was hard. It was challenging. I just want to make that clear. It wasn't like, oh yeah, and I just decided one day I'm going to stop speaking to him, and I did. No,
it was the process.
My
dad was
the hardest thing I've ever done in my life.
Wow.
By far. Yeah.
But you're speaking to him now, though, aren't you? You're speaking to him now. You have a no. Oh, okay.
I just keep feeling into it. I mean, my dad's old. He's in a care home.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't call it speaking. Nah, I don't know what it is. I don't know how. I don't. I just check in every now and then. Like, what do I want to do here? I support my mum. I'm not setting myself on fire for anyone.
Yeah, yeah. And that's such a personal decision as well, isn't it? Such a personal thing. And as I said, just like the whole Nigerian thing, going to Nigeria, it's whenever you're ready, isn't it, really? And I love the fact that you say you're constantly checking in, because that is self-development within itself. And I kind of hate when you have these gurus or these people that say you must do this or you should do that or you should do that. Well, it's a total personal process. It's totally down to you in terms of how you're feeling. And when you connect with yourself, you connect with your spirit, you're like, okay, this is what I'm feeling today. This is what I'm going to go with, and I accept that, and I love myself for it. And I just feel that's powerful.
Yeah,
I think that's fulfillment in itself.
It is, because you also then end up leaving space for other people to do the same. That's probably the reason why people tell me the things that they tell me, whether they're clients, friends, whatever. I've been told multiple times that, like, I can say anything to you. You don't seem to be shocked by anything. I'm like a taboo-free coach.
Yeah.
And I think that's because I have that space for myself. So I'm not trying to process my stuff while you're telling me your story. And I'm like, you know, when there were people that I'd be like, I'm not speaking to my dad. I'm like, it's your dad. You've got to. And I'm thinking, this person here, like, I know about their relationship with their parents. It's awful. If they had enough self-fucking respect,
they're going to do something.
Do the same sort of thing. But they, and that's fine. They're not choosing to, and that's okay. Instead of just being honest with themselves about that, they need to. They're projecting all their shit onto me right now, you know? Like, no, you don't, how do you know what's best for me?
I
don't know what's best for anyone else.
Yeah.
You know, I just share my story, and I'm not saying you need to do what I do. My work is all about helping people find their own way anyway.
And sometimes it can be painful as well, you know, because I had, when my parents were alive, we had ups and downs. And then there's sometimes where it felt painful, you know? Where you feel, or with family, whether it's your mother, your father, your sister, if you've had a disagreement or you've had something, or you feel that you've not been respected or acknowledged or whatever, it can feel painful. And sometimes you have to step back and feel, you know what, I can't talk to you for this, because that's my, and that's your healing. And I think sometimes it's okay for people to step back from relationships, which are the should relationships. Because when you step back from them and say, okay, I need to heal, I need to find this space now.
Yeah.
And then when you're ready to step forward, you're in a better position. See what I mean? You know?
People don't realise the effect it has on everything. If I have to be around someone in my family that my spirit cannot stand and doesn't want me to be around, activating my nervous system all the time and overriding that for decades, the other side of that is there are a lot of other people that I have in my, because I'm okay. I'm sending myself a signal that it's okay to have people generally in my life I can't fucking stand. And I have to XYZ. So it's kind of like all the knock-on effects. This relationship over here is not in isolation.
Yeah.
It's affecting all of your relationship dynamics.
Totally. Oh, wow. You know, it's just really deep. I'm going to have to bring it to a close there just because of time, but I love it. Thank you for being totally real and totally out there. And I love everything you have to say. I love what you're about. And I think you are fucking amazing. I'm going to bring in the F word there as well. You are absolutely. and it's so nice to have you on my show, showing up, being your true, authentic self. So I just want to say thank you for that, you know, and honour you for that as well. Yeah.
Thank you for creating this space, because I'm all for more real stories in the world. And thank you for inviting me on.
Oh,
and it feels like it's been a really gorgeous conversation. I hope it's been awesome to listen to you as well.
Yeah. And I'm sure that my listeners will really appreciate it. And because you never know who's listening, where they're at. And sometimes people just need to hear something, or maybe someone's going to listen to this and say, you know what? It's okay. They may be going through something and say, oh, it's okay. Because people beat themselves up inside about things, don't they? You know? And I feel that everything in life, if you allow it to, it happens in divine time in any way when you're in tune. So, yeah, that's it. Anyway, on that note, I'm just going to say from Tanya the Communication Doctor and from Lola Fayemi, adios!
Ciao.
Oh, brilliant. One of my takeaways from this show is conscious parenting. Leave space for others to be themselves, and don't be afraid to just be your authentic self and stand your ground, create your boundaries that are needed when needed, and just be authentic, be real, and accept life as it is, really, and deal with things step by step. Thank you for listening.